Over the last few weeks, we have been examining this concept of the seasons of the soul, corresponding to the seasons of our year. There is spring, a season to rise and renew. Summer, a season to run and to reach. Autumn, a season to reap and rejoice. And that brings us to winter. Just the sound of the word whistling through our lips puts a mental chill down our spines, doesn't it? Winter seems to speak of barrenness, of frigid feelings, of discontent or discomfort. Icy shadows spread over frozen ponds, naked branches reaching up as if looking for relief. Winter means shorter days and longer nights. Heavy gray clouds and harsh winds sting our faces. With grim determination, we trudge on, sometimes alone and isolated, within our own little world of heavy coats and frosty windows. We sometimes speak of the dead of winter, and that seems to be an apt description. Winter can be that time when you walk over frozen ground and you're convinced nothing will ever grow again. And I don't know of a single Christian who hasn't, at some point in their experience, gone through that winter of the soul. It's not always spring or summer in our spiritual lives. We all go through those times. My guess is if we were to take a poll this morning and I were to ask, what is your favorite season? We'd hear a number of responses. Some would talk about the freshness of spring, others the warmth of summer, some the crispness of fall, but I don't know how many people would say winter is actually their favorite season. Now, while it may not be our first choice of seasons, we cannot dispute its importance. In winter, nature takes a well-deserved break. And even the ice and the snow that can cause such havoc provide vital moisture for the soil for next year's crops. Not to mention how the cold temperature kills all the bugs. Yeah, that's a good thing. Winter gives us the ideal occasion to slow down. It's a season to rest and reflect. God did not create us to be machines, constantly working, constantly producing. And He Himself set the example. In Genesis chapter 2, at the end of a period of creating, Genesis 2, verse 2, by the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing. So on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it He rested from all the work of creating that He had done. God finished His work and He rested. I don't think He was tired. I don't think He's like, Gabriel, all this creating, I'm beat. I'm going to go take a nap. I don't think that was the point. God doesn't get tired. The point is, He finished His work. And now He's going to take some time to enjoy it. When we talk about resting, it doesn't necessarily mean sleeping. It means ceasing. Stop doing what you're doing and do something different. Now, beginning next Sunday and throughout the month of February, we're going to take an in-depth look at this idea of the Sabbath. And even though the word Sabbath doesn't appear in this passage, the word rest is the verb form of the noun for Sabbath. So you could say that God Sabbathed on the seventh day. And He established that day as the Sabbath day. So we're going to look at that more in detail. But the idea is God took a break. God stopped what He was doing for a time and did something else. And in doing so, He set an example for us to follow. Because unlike God, we do not have infinite strength. We cannot go on forever doing the same thing continuously and not wear out, break down, die. He created us that way. And I believe that's where this winter time of the soul comes in. And it's an important season, even though it may not be one we particularly like. I want to begin by considering the contributing factors to the winter of the soul. Now, the National Weather Service explains why we have seasons, particularly winter. As the earth spins on its axis, night and producing night and day, it also moves about the sun in an elliptical orbit that requires 365 1/4 days to complete, which is a year. The earth's spin axis is tilted with respect to its orbital plane. This is what causes the season. What causes the seasons is actually the tilt of the earth on its axis. When the earth's axis points towards the sun, it is summer for that hemisphere. When it points away from the sun, winter can be expected. Since the tilt of the axis is 23.5 degrees, the North Pole never directly points at the sun. But on the summer solstice, it is as close as it can be. Conversely, in the winter solstice, it's as far away from the sun as it can be. Midway between these two times, in spring and autumn, the spin axis of the earth points 90 degrees away from the sun. This means that on that date, day and night have about the same length. You have about 12 hours of each. So that's why we have seasons on earth. But why do we have seasons in our souls? Well, we go through these different periods in our lives. And unlike the meteorological seasons, they can't always be predicted. They don't always fall in the same months of the year. But there are some definite contributing factors to the winter of the soul. The first one I draw from that passage I read in Genesis 2, the completion of a goal or a project. Here, God finished His project of creation. He created all that He wanted to create at that time and said, okay, I'm done. That's it. And we sometimes come to the completion of a project, the completion of a goal, and we have some downtime following. Remember last week we talked about autumn as being a season where we reap and rejoice. We gather the fruits of our labors. We see the results of our efforts. And it's a time of rejoicing. And that is often followed by a time where we're not so busy. We're not as active. And we need that time to catch our breath, to restore our strength before the next thing comes along. Another contributing factor can be the end of a relationship or employment. Now, whether this end was anticipated or a complete surprise, whether it was something deliberate or completely out of our control, there's usually a period of inactivity that follows. Taking that time to gather our thoughts, to harness our emotions, is really wise, rather than jumping into the first opportunity that comes along. You've all heard about rebound decisions. They're hardly ever a good idea. And I realize that sometimes when it comes to employment, you got to get a job, so you got to, get back to work as soon as you can. But when you have the opportunity, if it came about in such a way that maybe you're collecting unemployment for a time or whatever it might be, use that time wisely and be able to relax, reflect, and re-energize. Sometimes an illness or an injury will bring on a winter season of the soul. You may be confined to a hospital bed, or you may be confined to your own home. It can keep us inactive for a period of time, maybe a short time, maybe a long time. Again, these seasons don't, follow the months necessarily that we do. We may have a prolonged winter of inactivity, of recovering from an injury or perhaps an illness or surgery. And this can be very frustrating, but there are not only physical benefits of healing, But mental, spiritual, emotional, these can be opportunities for healing in those areas as well. Even without a traumatic incident laying us up for a time, the aging process can bring on this season as well. Maybe it's a midlife identity crisis, or maybe it's the realization of our own mortality. I read this in the NIV Seniors Devotional Bible. One lady writes, "She is in the winter of her life. She now has more gray hair than dark. Her once deep brown eyes now are slightly cloudy, as if she's looking at her world through an early morning mist. She grieves the chill of an estranged relationship with one of her children. Blaming herself, she struggles to let go of the if-onlys and longs for the warmth of reconciliation. She lives with the dull ache of unspoken anger and the sting of love that's turned dutiful. Winter's cold is not always cozy, and the winter years are not always golden. Yet we each, in our own ways, do the best we can for those we love. Our love is always human, always short of perfection. We too will be inadequate stewards of our children's childhoods, incapable of meeting the needs of those we wish we could spare from all of life's hurts and disappointments. Although I cannot offer healing to one who lives in the winter years or bears a wintry heart, I can offer hope. The God of spring's new life, of summer's joy, and of autumn's fullness is also the God of winter's chill. Although we never know what lies beneath the frozen stillness, we can trust that surely after winter comes the spring." So whatever the contributing factors might be, if you find yourself in a winter season of the soul, remember the song, "It's Not Forever." These seasons pass. And this season can, as we're going to see, be even beneficial for our overall health. Let's move on now to the characteristic feelings of the winter of the soul. Now that we have identified what contributes to it, what emotions accompany this season? I think topping the list is loneliness, isolation, even sense of abandonment. Remember when Jesus was on the cross and he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He's actually quoting Psalm 22:1. David was in that state. He felt as though God had left him and he was all alone. And I'm sure each one of us have felt that at one time or another. Some of the ancient writers would describe this as the dark night of the soul. And it's not pleasant. It's not fun feeling that God is removed from us when we feel all alone. But it can be a time of great growth if we recognize what it is. Another common feeling in this winter of the soul is exhaustion. And this can occur on a number of levels, physically, intellectually, emotionally, socially, spiritually. It can be a combination of these. Remember that often winter follows fall, and fall can be a really busy season of gathering in, of reaping the benefits of what God has been doing in our lives. And we may be the busiest, and then it's done, and it's... We can be exhausted. A classic example of this is seen in the life of the prophet Elijah. 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah has challenged 450 prophets of Baal. "Come to Mount Carmel, we're going to have a showdown. You prepare your sacrifice, you call down your god, Baal," who, by the way, was the god of fire. "And if Baal answers by fire, he is God. I'm going to build an altar, offer sacrifice to Yahweh. I'm going to pray, and if he answers by fire, he is God." And all the people of Israel were there watching. And most of you know the story. Prophets of Baal, they tried all morning into the afternoon. Nothing happened. Elijah makes the altar, prepares the sacrifice, has 12 water jars of water dumped on the sacrifice. You know, usually if you want something to burn, you don't soak it with water. But he did. And then he prayed a simple prayer. And no sooner had the words left his mouth than fire comes down from heaven, burns the whole thing up, even laps up the water that it collected in the little ditch around it. And all the people said, Yahweh, he is God. Yahweh, he is God. They took those prophets of Baal and just slaughtered them. Done. Elijah wins. This must have been the greatest moment of his life. And at the end of the chapter, it says, because they had been under a severe drought for 3.5 years. And Elijah said to King Ahab, rain is coming. You better get to the next town, which was Jezreel, 18 miles away. And it says that Elijah outran Ahab's chariot all the way to Jezreel. He almost ran a marathon after this great victory. You think, wow, Elijah's on top of the world. He's going to be the next Time Magazine Man of the Year. I can see it, right? Then we get to chapter 19. Probably a day or so later. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with a sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elisha to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by tomorrow this time I do not make your life like one of them. Now you would think Elijah's like, bring it on. Come on, I just took on all your prophets and they couldn't do it. What makes you think you can? But that's not what happened. Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there and went himself a day's journey into the desert. He came to a broom tree, sat under it, and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. Wait a minute. How do you go from Superman to suicidal in that short amount of time? He was exhausted. Physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, every way possible. He was worn out. And it brought upon him that sense of the winter of the soul. In fact, Elijah exhibited all the classic signs of depression. He was afraid. He was fatigued. He felt like he was a helpless failure, that he was all alone. And that can happen even to the best of us, especially after a mountaintop experience like he had. You might think that the last time you would expect a season like this would be after a great victory, but it often happens that way. Because after that high, we got to come back down to earth. And sometimes it's with a thud. And we find ourselves in one of those seasons. In addition to the isolation or loneliness and the exhaustion, these winter seasons can often leave us feeling overwhelmed. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus said in Mark 14:34, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. The Greek term that's used there is a compound word. It's the usual Greek word for sadness and then a prefix that means extremely or exceedingly. Jesus was sorrowful to the maximum, to the nth degree, we might say. He was overwhelmed with sorrow. Psalm 18:4 says in very picturesque terms, the cords of death entangled me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. You get the sense of a drowning victim. Overwhelmed by the water and the waves, and they just cannot seem to stay above the surface. The same words Jonah used when he was swallowed by the great fish. We get that picture in our minds. And emotionally, I'm sure you know how that feels. To be so overwhelmed, you don't even know where to begin. And this often leads to another characteristic feeling, and that is hopelessness. It's described by one woman who says, I feel like I'm in a well 1,000 feet deep. From the bottom, I look up and see a faint light the size of a pinhole. But I have no ladder, no rope, and no way out. That's hopeless. And remember, hope talks about the future. So we know where we're at, but when we look ahead, there just doesn't seem like there's any way out, any way of changing. And all of this can lead to yet another characteristic feeling, a lack of motivation. When you feel alone, abandoned, exhausted, overwhelmed, hopeless, it's really hard to get out of bed in the morning. It's really hard to do anything. Those winter days when it's cold and blowing and you just want to go back under the covers and stay there all day? Well, emotionally and spiritually, we can go through that as well. It's really hard to get ourselves motivated to do much of anything. And the real kick about that is we can experience this winter of the soul any time of the year. So it might be beautiful outside, but we still feel the chill of that winter on the inside. Well, this leads us to the constructive functions of the winter of the soul. And you might think, what? Constructive? How? It all seems so dark and depressing. And it is, but I would say these times are also necessary. Because the winter season is a time of strengthening the soul. I want to conclude with three strengthening activities we should do when this winter sets in. The winter of the soul should be a time of rest. That song that I shared with you at the beginning of the service, one line always stuck out to me. If you don't rest when the winter is here, what will you bear in the fall? And that's true. When we just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going, eventually wear out. You've all heard the story of the kid that shows up with his axe ready to cut trees down. And initially he does great, but by the end of the week they let him go because he's fallen so far behind. And the foreman says, did you ever take time to sharpen your axe? Well, no, I didn't have time. That's why you fell behind. That's why we're letting you go. We need those times where we stop what we're doing, cease, be still, so that we can regain that strength. Several scriptures of the Psalms speak of this. Psalm 62, verses 1 and 5. My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him. Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from Him. When we feel hopeless, find rest in God. Psalm 91:1, He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Psalm 116:7, Be at rest once more, O my soul, for the Lord has been good to you. It might feel like God's a million miles away. It might seem like things are never going to get any better. But if you think back and you see what God has done, you're going to see He's going to bring you through this as well. Jesus invites all to come to Him in Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you what? Rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He put this into practice in Mark 6, verse 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to Him all they had done and taught. They had just had this successful ministry where they had gone out two by two and they'd cast out demons and they'd proclaimed the Word, and it was great. And they come back, and they're all excited about what God has done through them. Then because so many people were coming and going, they didn't have even a chance to eat. He said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. I'm sure they were thinking, wow, look at all these people. All these people that need to be healed and need to be saved and need our help, and oh, we just got to keep going. And Jesus says, no, you need to rest. You need to come to a quiet place. There's always going to be more to be done, but you can't do it all. Sometimes we need that rest. I mentioned earlier Elijah encountering this experience after his success in Mount Carmel. Going back to 1 Kings 19, verse 5 says, "Then he lay down under the tree and fell asleep. All at once an angel touched him and said, 'Get up and eat.' He looked around, and there by his head was a cake of baked bread over hot, or bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, 'Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you.' So he got up, ate and drank. Strengthened by the food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God." Elijah needed to sleep. He needed to eat. He needed to take care of his body. And that's something we often don't do. But when we are physically, mentally, and emotionally exhausted, we're not able to give our best for him. When our electrolytes are depleted and our body is malfunctioning for a lack of nutrition, we need to address those deficiencies. We need some good nutrition, rest, and exercise. Chuck Swindoll notes, "Sometimes the most spiritual thing you can get is a good night's sleep." You may think you need to pray longer, work harder, or fellowship more, but none of that may be the case. Elijah needed to take care of his physical needs in order to obey God's commands. Again, we're going to take a look next month at the Sabbath and how we do that. But the importance is this is a time of rest. Winter of the soul can also be a time to reflect. Often when we're so busy, we don't stop to look around and see where we've been, where we're at, where we're going. Take this time to evaluate your successes and your failures. Enjoy what went right. Learn from what went wrong. When you're in winter, be calm, be quiet, wait. Don't make any major decisions during that time. Allow yourself to recover. As Psalm 27:14 says, "Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord." That's not easy. We don't like to wait. Our least favorite place is the waiting room, right? But it's necessary. And then finally, it's an opportunity to renew. Isaiah 40, verses 29 to 31 promises, "He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." These winter times in our souls, I think, are very natural, but they're also very providential. They're intended for us to slow down, to calm down, to refill, to regroup, to rethink, realign, get a new perspective. Take a check on our values, our goals. You know, before you know it, winter's past. So I ask you, is this a winter season in your soul? Are you feeling abandoned, alone, exhausted, overwhelmed, and hopeless? Beginning to wonder if your soul will ever thaw out? These times come, but they also pass. When this winter season ends, you're going to be wiser, deeper, and stronger. Winters can be long, they can be hard, but never doubt that God is doing great things deep within you. Before you know it, spring is right around the corner again. So whatever phase of life you find yourself in, maybe you're in that springtime, and it's a time of new opportunities, it's a time to rise and renew. Maybe it's a time of summer where you're in full stride, running and reaching for those goals. Maybe it's an autumn season where you're gathering in the fruits of your labors. You're seeing results happen. Or maybe it's that winter time. Time to rest. Time to reflect. Time to be restored. Just remember, it's not forever, just a season of the soul. And God will work through all of the seasons as we let Him.